Welcome to the Let's Clear the Air Energy Podcast. Conversations focused on how some of the world's top energy leaders are innovating to deliver clean, affordable, and reliable energy for the future.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Let's Clear the Air Energy Podcast. We're on episode number 2 of the 2025 season with the goal of diving into innovations, challenges, successes of powering our world. I'm your host, Adam Murray, joined by Brian Nix this season. So Brian, how are you doing today?
I am doing great. It's a good rainy day in Tulsa, so.
Awesome. Well, today we got a great guest, Mr. Richard Meyer. He is, let me get his title correct here, currently the Vice President of Energy Markets, Analysis, and Standards for the American Gas Association. Richard, thanks for joining us.
Great to be here, gentlemen. Glad to talk with you.
We always like to start off our podcast with a little icebreaker. And as we're here in the first week of April, to put a timestamp on it, we got NBA playoffs coming up. We like to talk sports. I got my basketballs up there, but we got the NBA playoffs coming up and the NCAA Final Four. So let's clear the air. Are you more of a college basketball person, or are you more of an NBA pro sports person?
I think March Madness is the greatest time of the year, so I got to go with the NCAA, but still a lot of love for the NBA.
Yeah, it's always an exciting time, although this year I think there was only a couple buzzer beaters, so that's...
The dogs were not hunting this year. It has been a lot of chalk.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out if that's NIL and the transfer portal, or if that's there's a couple really good teams, right? All four ones has only happened one time. Well, let's dig on in. Brian, you want to kick us off? I know you had some good questions going on.
Yeah.
Pre-recording, so happy to let you go.
Excellent. So, yeah, I mean, it's kind of an interesting day to, I guess, to record this podcast, because one of our big questions in the industry was talking about tariffs and what that's looking like for everybody. And then, you know, April 2nd comes around and the announcement of all the tariffs are coming in. So got a lot of people talking about them. So I think good question maybe start off with is, yeah, what's the deal with the tariffs? What do you know about them? And have you seen any data yet? I know it's early, but how it's affecting anybody or?
Well, you know, just by way of kind of orienting where we are in the industry, American Gas Association, we represent the investor owned natural gas utilities. These are the regulated companies that serve natural gas to homes and businesses in all 50 states. We, like many others across the energy and across the energy space and across the economy, are looking at how these changes in the tariffs might affect consumers, might affect supply chains, and you know, what does this all mean at the end of the day? So obviously the tariff conversation has evolved quite a bit since the inauguration and the initial tariffs announced really kind of at the end of January and early February. Our primary kind of focus, at least initially, was on what happens to the molecule. We have across North America, you know, connected with Canada and Mexico, you know, our energy system is very integrated on the natural gas side. A lot of natural gas is traded back and forth with Canada every day, and it's part of it's an important part of a reliable energy system. And about 10% of, just a little less than 10% of natural gas supplies here in the U.S. come from Canada. You know, it's a, you know, any sort of additional costs or duties put on Canadian natural gas supply coming into the U.S. would be meaningful. So we've been looking at that. And then lately, you know, as we see the tariff conversation expand to other countries, you know, other issues, other materials, we're looking at how do tariffs affect the cost and availability of materials and equipment that are essential for the gas distribution sector and really the whole natural gas value chain. But you asked, you know, what's going on today? This is a pretty fast moving target. The president announced a wide array of tariffs yesterday. I will focus in on just a couple things here. One, there were and remain still exemptions on North American energy. And really, it's not across the board, but natural gas that's produced in Canada and then moved into the United States is currently exempt. In other words, the duties are zero. So that means consumers that might utilize natural gas from Canada, that they won't be paying extra for that natural gas now. But that said, we're still looking across, you know, the impacts due to all of the other issues that might affect the supply chains. We're going to continue to look at that.
Yeah, I mean, You know, with that said, are you guys tracking materials? I mean, steel and compression or whatever that might be that has an effect on natural gas as well?
That's a great question. You know, as a trade association, we represent companies. We have, you know, we're located in Washington, D.C., so we interact with the federal government on behalf of the gas utility sector. And, you know, what we do is we work with our members, our member utilities, to understand what they are doing, how are they planning and preparing, how are they evaluating costs, you know, where are they tracking and planning for, you know, changes in supply of materials that could be like meters, regulators, even, you know, pipeline materials and so forth. And so it kind of varies, right? You know, depending on where you are in the country, you're going to have a different source for a lot of these types of materials. So we're still working through that. We're not doing any direct tracking, but we're trying to understand across our membership and across the market what's happening. And the purpose of all of that is to make sure that we are informing policymakers and those in the roles and responsibilities for making decisions around these issues so that they are fully cognizant of the potential impacts and how that might affect material availability, cost to consumers, and of course, if there's any concerns around safety, because these are critical energy systems that deliver essential energy every day. And we got to make sure they continue to be modernized, improved, and that we continue to operate a safe and reliable natural gas system.
Is there a lack of knowledge of policymakers on how tariffs and things like that do affect all the prices and supply chains and everything? Or is there a pretty good understanding of that?
I think on any issue, you know, there's a kind of a curve here where some policymakers are going to be really up to speed on issues that are facing the natural gas industry and even the gas distribution sector in particular. Of course, it's Congress, and so we get new folks coming in every 2 years. So we're always working to educate and just talk about the role and the value of natural gas and gas infrastructure in meeting the needs of, you know, of a growing clean energy economy. Tariffs are no different from any other public policy issue where it's really critical that we're talking about what it is we do, what services we provide, what customers we serve, and how any particular policy might affect them. And, you know, certainly tariffs are included in that conversation.
Yeah. So kind of keeping it on the global scale, right, that these tariffs, you know, have an effect on, you know, what do you think about, you know, the current LNG exports, you know, given that there's been a couple approvals and given that we're now looking at a global natural gas economy, you know, shipping overseas and things like that. How do you think that will affect pricing in the U.S.? How do you think that will affect, you know, our volumes of natural gas here?
It's a great question. We could probably spend the whole hour on just, you know, these set of topics alone. But let me just peel off a couple key issues that we're looking at and that I'm thinking about. And let me say, one of my key roles at AGA is to look at the markets, what's happening with supply, demand, pricing. What are those global drivers? And LNG is a key part of that. Right now, what we're seeing is that LNG exports globally, not just from the U.S., but globally, are in record territories. But that's also true in the U.S. because the U.S. is driving a lot of that. We are exporting more natural gas than we ever have before. And we're poised to export a lot more in the coming years. You know, LNG, liquefied natural gas, these, you know, the primarily sourced at these large facilities in the Gulf Coast, a little bit on the East Coast, and then on the West Coast of Canada, which is coming, a little bit of Mexico, I should say, as well. But these large liquefaction facilities, they consume a lot of natural gas, and the capacity, the overall capacity to liquefy and export is set to double across North America by 2028, 2029, depending on the timing of some of these facilities. So our ability and the overall capacity to export natural gas via LNG is going to grow or expected to grow pretty significantly. Now there's a question, are we going to utilize all that capacity? Right now, my hunch is yes. Natural gas remains a critical energy source across the globe to meet growing economies, help reduce emissions, and certainly in like places like Europe, where it's a critical source of supply as they try to work their way off of Russian pipeline gas. And so, you know, maybe the last thing I'll say on this is around pricing. To date, we haven't seen any real connection between LNG exports and natural gas pricing. In fact, all the kind of analysis and studies have shown that LNG exports have not had any sustained and significant direct impact on natural gas prices. We are, you know, LNG is a drive, you know, one component of demand, but, you know, we demand gas across the entire U.S. economy, but we're also producing a lot more. And, you know, production, our ability to drill for, process, and then transport vast sums of natural gas continues to keep up and even in some cases outpace the demand that we're seeing across the U.S. economy. Now, there's some short-term issues. Sometimes demand's going up faster than supply. But over the long term here, it's really been the abundance of natural gas and the ability to produce this gas at commercially competitive prices that has positioned the U.S. to be a competitor on the world stage. And we are now the largest natural gas producer and exporter, LNG exporter in the world.
Well, that's a lot to unpack there. Thank you for that. Yeah, that's a lot of good information. You know, bringing it in more domestically, you know, natural gas production occurs in different areas of the United States. So, you know, how do those compare and how do they compete as far as giving volumes to these LNG facilities?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the U.S. is really blessed with a lot of natural gas resources. And really starting about two decades ago, we cracked the code, so to speak, on how to produce from what are called shale formations. And so this is the hydrofracking technology, horizontal drilling and hydraulic fracturing to really make commercial, which previously uncommercial resources. We always knew they were there, but we couldn't quite get it out and do so in an economically competitive way. There are some major regions across the country that have, or major basins, I should say, that have a substantial amount of natural gas resource in them. One of the largest fields in the world is in the Appalachian Basin, also the Utica, which is co-located nearby. I mean, it's the envy of the world, right? Yeah. So this is a formation that extends from really West Virginia, and if you're including the Utica and part of East Ohio there, through Pennsylvania up into New York, and we're producing a substantial amount of natural gas from Appalachia today. Increasingly, we are also producing shale oil, which when you do that, you also get natural gas associated with that, and so we have also the envy of the world, the Permian Basin there in East Texas and Western New Mexico, a lot of natural gas supplies coming out of those predominantly oil plays. And there's many more. The one thing I'll say is that we're seeing a lot of growth in the southern part of the United States. This includes not just the kind of liquids rich regions that I mentioned, but also the Haynesville Basin, which is kind of in that Texas, Louisiana area. And what's good is that we have a lot of growing demand in the southern part of the country associated with LNG exports and other demand that we can talk about. And that's going to be co-located with a lot of this growing supply and where we're also building infrastructure to move that supply. So I think that there's, you know, hopeful signs here that we're going to continue to be able to produce and build that infrastructure to meet these growing demand requirements.
Yeah, I almost envision, because of so many different areas where we're getting production, that it'll almost end up like electrical grids, right? You'll have kind of a united, dedicated pipeline system that really pushes it down to maybe some of these LNG export facilities. Do you see a lot of, data on areas that are just, they're producing so much that they can't get out of the area and price fluctuation between certain areas of the United
States? Well, you raise a good point. The critical bottleneck here is not our ability to find the resource and produce it. It's actually our ability to ultimately process and move it. And really, it's the moving part that's the real bottleneck here. And that's pipeline constraints, where in some cases we have producing regions and there's not enough takeaway capacity to move that gas that's produced. And what happens when you have too much supply? You have lower prices. And we see that in places like East Texas, for example, where they're just, you know, at periods, there just isn't enough pipeline capacity to move a lot of that associated gas out of there. You know, in the Northeast, that's another kind of maybe concerning signal here in the broader energy space, where it's still really hard to build a pipeline. And, you know, a major pipeline just got built, finalized last year, the Mountain Valley Pipeline, that took 10 years.
Yeah.
To build. A lot of that was all just related to permitting and court battles. And frankly, it just took, they takes so long. And in that intervening time, other pipeline projects were proposed and then ultimately scuttled because of just the difficulty in permitting and court challenges and other issues. You know, it's not just the permitting that's a challenge. It's all the costs associated with that process. I actually heard, I was at CERAWeek a couple weeks ago. This is the big energy conference in Houston. And one of the major pipeline company CEOs was up there and he said something that really stuck with me. He said that the cost to permit a pipeline is now twice the cost of the pipe itself. And I said, well, sheesh, you know, we gotta address the permitting issues if we're going to continue to build and meet this moment of energy demand that we're seeing in front of us.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's interesting.
You know, I didn't introduce Stuart Salters also. He's a part of the GPA, and I know he's kind of itching to get in a question here. So, Stuart, why don't you jump on in, my man?
No, thanks, Adam, and thanks, Brian, for letting me interlope this conversation. Richard, you know, Richard's a good friend, and so I'm excited to have the conversation with him. You hinted at it a little bit, Richard, so go ahead and tell us, what is all this demand? Where's it coming from? Will we be able to meet it here in the U.S.?
I'm a bit of a broken record at this point, because every time I talk to someone about what's happening in the market, I said, well, we just had record demand. And that's been kind of the case for, honestly, several years now. We had a record amount of natural gas utilized in 2024 across the year. We set new records both in the winter and in the summer. Last year, just in 2025, now let's go to this calendar year, we set record demand across the lower 48 in the United States in January and in February for the month. And then we also saw, you know, we had a daily record in January. That was on January 21st. It was probably pretty cold where you were. And that was a key driver of that, among other things. And then year to date, I was just looking at this today, year to date demand is also a record right now. I'll also say year to date production right now is also a record. So we're just seeing all these superlatives across the board. And you know, we're in a period of overall energy growth, and the natural gas market is a big part of that and helping to satisfy that growing demand. Stuart, you asked, where is that demand happening? So we already talked about LNG exports, and that's a key part of it, but it's not the only part. And in fact, over the last couple of years, one of the major drivers has been the electric power sector. And we continue to see more natural gas used to generate electricity. And that's for a few reasons. One, we're still retiring coal in this country. The legacy coal plants are retiring, and you still need natural gas or the other resource, but natural gas is stepping in as that baseload resource to firm up the grid, provide that electricity. We're also seeing natural gas used as a balancing resource, as we're seeing a lot of wind, still a lot of solar. There's a growing amount of batteries as well. But natural gas is a key way to balance the grid, you know, and help firm the grid with as these variable renewable resources continue to grow. And then, you know, just the fact of the matter is gas is what's available on those days you need it most. I mean, it is a 24/7, 365 resource. And for the power sector, as well as other sectors, gas is what you count on to meet those peak loads on those coldest and those hottest days of the year.
What is, like, is there something in particular that the power generation is being used for? I mean, is it just residential load or commercial load? Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, traditionally it has been, you know, when it's hot during the summer, we're running our air conditioners. And so that cooling load drives power requirements, and natural gas is a big part of the way we satisfy that power demand. Similarly, during the winter, we've seen increasingly larger and larger amounts of electricity requirements during winter months. We just set a winter record for natural gas demand this past January. Another indication there. Some of that is, I think, just due to more homes. And even if you're running a furnace, a natural gas furnace, you still need some electricity to kind of keep the power running. You know, in the southern part of the country where there's a lot more electric heat, that could be a key driver of electric demand during those winter months as well. So, you know, just overall, the economy is growing. Homes and businesses are connecting to the system, and that's been a key driver. That said, there's some real emerging issues here that I think are going to be maybe pushing us up the demand curve even farther. We're seeing record amounts of investment in the manufacturing sector. The amount of data center build right now is on just a increasingly steep upward climb. Effectively, the amount of money invested in data centers has tripled over the past 2 years, almost 2.5 years now, and a lot of expectations that that's going to continue to grow. So between our strategic manufacturing sectors, the reshoring that's taking place, which is driven by, I would say, a post-COVID hangover and a realization that we need to get our supply chains back here in the U.S., there's been some federal incentives as well that's driven some of this manufacturing investment. And of course, we could probably spend another hour talking about generative AI and what's driving the kind of computer electronics, the electrical space there. So those, I think, are going to be some real key domestic drivers of demand going forward. And the natural gas sector is going to be a key way to meet that. Because as I said, we've already been growing pretty substantially for the past 20 years. We're here to meet that demand and scale up quickly.
So natural gas prices are up, relatively significantly over the past little short period of time. So, what sort of effect do you think that will have on any of these projects or our ability to ship LNG or even direct to consumer pricing, right? What do you think about that?
It's a good question. So I think everything's a little relative, right? We are up from 2024 levels. 2024 average Henry Hub spot price was just a little over $2. That's pretty low in the grand scheme of things. Some might say maybe not sustainable over the long term. And what I mean by that is you have to have a sufficient price to incentivize continued production, right? You got to have a somewhat profitable price upstream, but then an affordable price downstream where you're consuming the gas. So today at $4 or thereabouts at Henry Hub, that's still, while it's relatively higher compared to the last couple years, the grand scheme of history, that's a very low and competitive price and probably on the lower end of the long-term ranges someone might have quoted you, 10, 15 years ago. And then if you go even farther back, so you look at where natural gas prices were 20 years ago, where, prices were climbing. I'm going to look this up real quick. I want to tell you, prices on an inflation adjusted level, sometimes above 20, almost $25 at points. And again, that's inflation adjusted. At $4, this is pretty, pretty good and competitive price, I would say. Now, that's not to diminish any consumer hardships or the price of energy really matters. But, when I look at the context of where we're at, we're producing a record amount of natural gas. We're demanding record amounts of natural gas. We are globally competitive in terms of our manufacturing sector and the energy exports that we have. And we're doing that at a price between, let's say, $3 and $5. I think is potentially a very sustainable, kind of path forward.
Yeah, I've read a couple of books that basically said, at $4, the consumer, still doesn't feel a lot of pain. And, natural gas companies can generally be relatively profitable. So I think we're sitting at an all right level for now is what I hear. I'm not the expert.
Well, and you got to look, compare the U.S. That's a commodity price. So just the price of the molecule at a given point in time, Europe paying, and prices have come down here, $13, Asia paying $13 or so. And so, you look at our $4 and that's a very competitive price. That's why the rest of the world's looking to us to help supply. It's not just as a reliable trading partner, but as a supplier of affordable natural gas. We talked about the linkage between prices and LNG exports. And I'll just reiterate, my view is that we can continue to grow demand across the economy, including exports, and do so at relatively affordable prices.
It'd probably help out areas that don't have a lot of oil production with the natural gas, having a stronger natural gas price, giving them a little more incentive to drill and actually make a product. I think that's what's benefited the Permian for so long is just how much oil is there. And that's what's driving all the production of the gas, right?
Yeah, that's right. And so there's, that's a dynamic that's maybe kind of a next tier down where you gotta look at, well, how do oil prices, which induce oil production, how does that then affect the natural gas price where you've got natural gas production now kind of unlinked with you know, the commodity drivers themselves, where there's other basins. I mentioned the Haynesville before, the app, you know, those basins in Appalachia. Those are much more, generally much more dry gas plays and will be much more sensitive to the natural gas price itself.
With the Permian being mentioned, there's been some articles, some reports that, you know, they might be reaching their peak oil production out there. I don't know if that's true or not, but you know, given that, do we think that will affect natural gas in any way?
Well, I don't know about that. I guess I'm just, I'm kind of in a wait and see mode. Two ways I think about this, and I don't know if they're the right way to think about it. That's just how I think about it. One is there were a lot of, you know, so I've been at AGA since 2010, and that was kind of the early shale days. It was even before shale oil in the U.S. took off. It was mostly shale gas back then. And then, you know, now it's both shale oil and shale gas. And there were different points, you know, over the last decade in my career where a lot of folks said, hey, this is the peak in this basin. We're never going to see any more gas growth out of the Haynesville, or there, you know, really isn't a lot of potential out of the Bakken, which of course was never really a credible statement to begin with, in my view. And so I guess when I hear like, oh, we're about to peak, I need to take that with a bit of caution. You know, okay, what price are we talking about? You know, how is that defining activity? We're at what? I don't know. Where are oil prices today? $60? Are we?
Yes.
Okay. So, you know, you drop a little bit farther down and that's going to disincentivize, you know, production activity and drilling rigs. People will pull back and, you know, and then do people say, well, that's the peak. So we'll see. That said, there was some talk at CERAWeek. I mentioned the conference down there in Houston, and even some energy executives starting to signal that longer term, we might be kind of reaching that, you know, high point in the Permian. Now, you know, again, you have to kind of interpret those signals from, you know, through a few different lenses. And again, what are your underlying assumptions here with regard to price and all that? But I think the takeaway from some of those statements I had was that there's still a tremendous amount of resource. And just because something's peaked doesn't mean it's not going to continue and sustain at a given level over time. So, you know, what's the shape of this curve? Are we going up and then back down? Are we kind of going up gradually? Are we going to go up and plateau? So what's, you know, and what price do we do that? So, you know, I'm kind of in a wait and see mode on this. I don't have any unique crystal ball, but my experience teaches me that, like, there's a pretty tremendous resource we have in the U.S. and don't discount our innovative ability to get better and better at finding and extracting what's there, because that's been the story for the last 20 years, and we're only still getting better at it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. I had a question I think maybe all of y'all can weigh in on. So, Richard, you mentioned the value of the members that you work with providing natural gas to folks during the wintertime, whether it's for furnaces or if it is for electricity, for heat pumps. I guess, can you talk a little bit about what your members or the folks you work with are doing to ensure that natural gas does get there when they need it on those coldest days? And Brian, Adam, from where y'all sit in the supply chain, you know, what are the folks you're working with, or what are your companies doing to make sure when it is cold, and it is what it is, right? We've had experiences in our country where the supply chain was impacted because of cold weather. So throw that one out there for y'all to talk about.
Adam, Brian, you want me to jump on this one first?
Yeah, go ahead. And then Brian, you process the gas, so we'll hear from you next.
Yeah. Okay. Sounds good.
Well, again, from the AGA perspective, the gas utility perspective, our members' first and primary focus is always safety, right? So maintaining the systems we have, modernizing them, and just ensuring that the day-to-day, season-to-season, year-to-year activities ensure that safe and reliable delivery. And so a lot of what we're doing and what we're doing with our members is to always make sure we're continually advancing the ball on safety and making sure we have good rules of the road to help drive those, you know, drive those actions across the country. The other thing, you know, the members do is, you know, work to procure that supply and making sure it's available 24/7, 365, and especially on those days that customers need it most. I really want to just kind of focus on this for a second, because the gas utility sector is pretty unique in the energy space. Not a lot of energy players plan the same way that they do. What do I mean by that? The goal of a gas utility, when they plan their system, when they design it, when they build it, is to make sure that they can meet demand on that coldest day in, let's pick a time period, 30 years, right? Everything is backed out from that one goal. All the reliability, again, safety on those days, and ensuring you have gas supplies. So you build a whole gas supply portfolio to make sure that it's available on that coldest day in, you know, however many years. And that's a pretty unique aspect of the system. And that drives a lot of decisions in terms of how you go into the market and buy gas and how you do that in a way that's prudent costs for customers. How you go and make sure you have enough storage so that gas is available on those coldest days when demand's really high. And then how you plan the system so that, you know, your customers, you know, still have that gas, that, you know, that essential energy when they need it. That's a lot of what we're doing with our members. There's obviously a lot of other aspects in terms of working with customers and helping them get more efficient every day, providing them new types of energy sources, including things like renewable natural gas, which is of growing interest and attention across the economy. And then, you know, meeting local obligations, whether it's in terms of emissions reduction goals, you know, consumer access goals. Maybe it's to ensure that you have a program so that those customers that maybe are, you know, have a lower income or are having troubles paying their bills, you know, that they have access to programs to help them, you know, to help them pay their bills and you know, and still have energy when they need it most.
Brian, how about on the processing side?
Yeah, so we kind of got caught in a weird spot during, what was it, Uri winter storm down in Texas. So we have assets, you know, Oklahoma, North Dakota. They're used to colder weather. So the build of the plants, different things. They you know, put things in buildings. They have heaters, all kinds of things that they deal with. In Texas, not so much, right? It doesn't get that cold typically. So it was a weird spot where, you know, our plants, when we produce gas and process it, we actually require electricity to do this, right? So we also supply the gas to the electrical provider. So if we don't have electricity because the power plants are down, we can't produce the gas. We can't get the gas to the power plants to come back on and use electricity. So kind of a catch-22 situation. So when that happened, basically we've gone through a big process of trying to winterize our equipment, our plants, facility. A lot of focus has been on those aspects. And so part of my group, when we build these plants, that's one of the predominant things we think about now, especially when we're looking at our safety and our hazard analysis and things, is, you know, where something may not have ever frozen before. Well, now it will, and it can. And so we're looking at how to fix that, how to keep things moving, how to stay reliable during those moments. And I know the electrical grid, and I can't think of the regulatory board in Texas, what their acronym is, but you know, they had a lot of meetings and came up with some incentives and some things for power plants and power providers to also do. I can't speak as much to that, but I do know that's been a big focus for them. They've been spending a lot of capital and money on trying to make sure that when it does get cold, that they are not freezing and shutting down. So it got fairly cold this winter. It wasn't obviously the storm type cold, but we did fairly well. We stayed on our producers stayed online, were able to keep flowing gas to us. So it worked out a lot better. I think we're making a lot of strides on it, but yeah, it's a thing you never know you need it till you need it. So it's kind of a philosophy we've been trying to change and fix.
Can I pick up on that? Because what one thing AGA has been doing is we're participating in what's called the Natural Gas Readiness Forum. This is a way, you know, working with, you know, this was really stood up by NARUC, the National Association of Regulatory Utility Commissioners. And coming out of these major winter events, you mentioned Uri, Brian, there was also Winter Storm Elliott in the Northeast, you know, concerns around natural gas reliability, particularly on those coldest days. So AGA has been working to facilitate forums, you know, a collaboration between industry, regulators, and others so that we're talking about how to prepare, plan ahead for these types of activities. There's a lot more I can say on it, but I just want to kind of just, Brian, what you're talking about is a lot of what I'm hearing is that the industry is learning. I'd say the industry, largely speaking, upstream, especially, that the industry's learned from these these recent events that certain, in some cases, there's been regulations that have been passed or recommendations made. But what I'm seeing, whether it's on the processing side or even, you know, the upstream producer side, is that they're working to address these issues. And last thing I'll say is on this last winter, it got really cold. It was the coldest in decades, and we didn't see the same level of kind of production loss as we'd seen in recent years. Now, maybe there's some other factors involved, but my hunch here is that we're starting to see evidence of the upstream industry, let's say, the fruits of those labors starting to kind of make their way into the market data here. That's my take.
Yeah, definitely.
Exactly right.
And I can kind of put a bow on that, right? My company engineers, procures, fabricates, and constructs all of those facilities, right? So we don't own them, but we build them. And a lot of our work the past couple of years has been based around electrification, but also backup generation in case those go down, and then winterizing, you know, pre-existing facilities to make sure that they are safe and reliable, right? Which we've talked about. So good conversation, Richard. I mean, we could talk for a couple more hours, I'm sure. I really want to thank you for coming on. And I know I see the smiles on the guys' faces. I think we all got more questions, but to be conscious of your time, we'll wrap it up here. We always like to exit the conversation with, it's 3 years from now, and you're back on the podcast, and you're happy. So what has gone on over the course of the past couple of years that's caused you to be optimistic and happy about what's going on?
We have passed permitting reform. We are back to building things in a timely way that engages stakeholders but doesn't hold up the process. We've got good rules of the road in terms of consumer access to the energy appliances that that they want, so they could choose from a range of options here. And we've got a roaring, growing economy because we are leveraging the abundant resources that we have in the United States.
I feel like you've answered that question before. Excellent answer, man. Appreciate it.
That was my first time, but that's where we're trying to go.
That was perfect. Well, Brian Stewart, you guys got anything to wrap up?
Yeah, I appreciate your time, Richard. That's very interesting. You probably have a lot on your plate and a lot of different parties that you're talking with in Washington. So appreciate you coming on the podcast and talking with us.
Gentlemen, it's been my pleasure, and hopefully I don't have to wait 3 years to see you again, but I'll do it anytime. Glad to talk with you all today. This was a lot of fun.
Well, to the audience out there, thank you very much for listening, and catch us on the next episode. Have a good one.
Thank you for listening to the Let's Clear the Air Energy Podcast. If you like what you have heard, subscribe and rate us on your favorite podcast app. You can email us with questions or comments to Let's Clear the Air Energy Podcast @gmail.com.